Now, back to the Eric Stewart Show on WMAL.
Welcome back, as always, the Beacon Bits, that part of our show where Stuart Rosenthal, Mr. Beacon himself. By the way, you started the Beacon newspaper 26 years ago.
That's correct. Right.
Why did you call it the Beacon?
Oh, okay. The story is that there was a paper, in fact, a number of papers called the Senior Beacon at that time that had started in Colorado Springs originally and grown from there around the country. And it was called Senior Beacon because in Colorado Springs, there is Pikes Peak, and on top of Pikes Peak is a beacon.
Oh.
So in Colorado Springs, the paper was called the Senior Beacon as a way of homage to Pikes Peak.
Oh, okay.
But it seemed to fit, and so people who started up versions of the paper around the country kept the name.
I see.
As did we, and then we dropped the Senior, you know, a number of years ago, about a decade ago.
Now, you have this paper. Do you have another one somewhere else as well?
Well, we have four editions of the Beacon.
Okay.
Yeah, we have the one here in the greater Washington area. There's one in greater Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
There's a separate edition for Howard County.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an edition out in Palm Springs, California.
Okay. And that's not that old, right? That started...
Those are relatively new.
Relatively new.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this your brainchild, or is this something that was created by...
Well, no, as I say, it was started in Colorado Springs.
Okay.
About 20 years before we started, actually.
Okay.
And there are papers like this around the country, actually.
I see.
Of course, we're the best, but that's...
Well, of course.
My own personal opinion.
So do we find similar articles in other beacons? But some
well, everybody chooses their own content, so they're all different.
Good. Fascinating. Well, the Beacon. Okay, so what are we going to talk about then?
Okay, well, now we're talking about tech stocks in our money section. You know, the stock market's really been doing well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people should be in it right now. They should not be waiting on the sidelines, apparently. But people are concerned because tech stocks have gone up so much. And they remember the crash. The dot-com bust, and they wonder, well, is it the same thing again?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer from our analysts that are quoted in the story is no. Actually, this is a very different situation this time around. Yes, there are some stocks that are overpriced. Yes, you would have to be careful about certain pockets where there's high valuations. But in general, they say big, well-established tech stocks will really do well, and here's why. First of all, the tech companies have really slashed their costs to improve their profitability. Back in 2000, you know, they were all about eyeballs, and they were none of them making any money. They were losing money hand over fist, and yet they were still had high valuations. Now, they're actually making a lot of money. In fact, tech companies kept about 18 cents of every dollar in revenue as operating profit last year, which is more than any other sector and nearly double the average for the S&P 500.
Wow.
So that shows they're a very profitable group in general.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, their price-to-earnings ratios are much more reasonable. In fact, they're among the least expensive on the market right now. And third, they're now paying dividends. There was a time when tech companies put all their money back into the company and didn't pay anything out to the stockholders. Those days are gone. Everybody knows dividends are important to people's continued survival. So they actually now make up the biggest – they are the biggest dividend payer as a group in the stock market today, in the S&P 500, which is, again, a surprise to people. People don't think of it that way. And the final thing is that investors really bid up the price of all these stocks many years ago because they were speculative.
Yes.
And now people are so much more circumspect and so much concerned about it that they have not been doing that. So when the prices are high, it really reflects some good fundamentals.
Outstanding. Read about it in the Beacon newspaper. What else in there?
Well, there's another article on how do you avoid the costs and delays of probate. You know, everybody sort of knows they should have a will.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is when you pass things off by will, there's a legal expense and time delay and whatnot. It takes up to a year. It uses up to 5% or so of the value of the property in the estate for legal costs.
Mm-hmm.
There are many strategies to avoid it, and this article touches on several of them. It's based on a book called 8 Ways to Avoid Probate. Among them is a living trust. You've probably had somebody on the show before talking about that. You know,
sure.
Where it's a revocable trust, but what it does is it sends assets directly to whoever you name as a beneficiary.
Okay.
And you can use an alternate beneficiary if that person's no longer alive or whatever.
Okay.
There's also your retirement plans. You can give beneficiaries on those, and they'll go automatically to your beneficiary. You don't have to worry about that. It doesn't go through the stock, through the probate or the courts. Then bank accounts and CDs. You can even keep them out of probate by designating them payable on death and, again, giving the beneficiary. The only problem here is that you can't give an alternate beneficiary. So if your beneficiary has passed away, it doesn't work anymore. And then you can even do that with stocks and bonds and your brokerage accounts. You can give them the name of your beneficiary and have a transfer on death registration for it. So all these are all ways in which one can avoid at least some assets going through probate, but you probably will still need a will for some of your assets.
Yes, if you need good advice, go ahead and read this article and then find
and consult a good attorney. Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
You can read about it in the Beacon newspaper, which is found online at thebeaconnewspapers.com or at over 1,500 drop spots, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout the metropolitan area.
If you don't know where to go, call them.
Give us a call, 301-949-9766.
As always, The Beacon is the place to read about what's important to you. Thank you, Stuart.
Thank you, Eric.
When you choose your real estate agent to help you buy or sell, you need to find somebody you can trust and somebody who's smart and understands the local market. They don't have to have a lot of experience in your neighborhood, which actually contradicts something that's in my current edition of the Market Ready Guide. Because what I've found is that the local agent may have knowledge about schools or may have relationships with the people in the neighborhood, but what really matters is the ability to sell the value of the house to prospective purchasers. And that's a skill. And that's a gift, and that's not born just from knowledge. Knowledge is important and can be easily gotten, but the skill of selling is not. Skill of selling requires either the innate gift that God gives you, the ability to communicate with people and help people see the value, and sometimes people come out of the womb with that. Rarely. Normally, it takes years and a lot of dedication to understand how to listen and articulate the value of a property and really sell the value of it. So in my current guide, I actually give the slight edge to the local realtor when really it's not about the local realtor as much as it is in the skill of the agent in selling the value. Hope that makes sense to you. So it's important. You've got to do some legwork when you're looking for a good agent, you're researching agents, because even if they might be recommended by a friend, because, you know, you don't want to choose someone who's a nice person or a fun drinking buddy who may not be a great agent. Just because a friend says, hey, you should try Bob. Maybe Bob did a great job on one sale because he sold it in a few days. Everything worked like clockwork. It's the historical average that you need to look at when you're interviewing brokers. What's their ability to overcome objections on an appraisal? What's their ability to really sell value? And how do they communicate that through the various means of marketing? One of the tools that at the Eric Stuart Group, what we've started to use is the social media of the internet to try to find the right audience. Now, we're going to talk a little bit later in the show about pools, and Candy Watts is with me today. You know, pool is a specific value proposition. For some audiences, it's actually a negative. I don't want a pool because I don't want my kids to drown. I've heard that so many times in my career. For others, I want a pool because our life will center around the time that we spend at the pool. That's the buyer that we need to find for your home. That's the buyer that we need to find when your home has a pool, right? Same would be true if there was an elevator, and we need to find someone who would value an elevator. Well, because of the analytics that are available to us, we're able to hire through some of the social media groups to hire analysis of those people who might be open to wanting a pool more likely versus, you know, you could put out a shotgun ad. That's kind of like what we do in the newspaper. Essentially, you throw it out there, you shoot your shotgun, and all that information just flies any which way coming out of the gun. It doesn't have the focus of a rifle. You know, when you're doing target practice, you want to shoot the bullseye. A shotgun is going to take out the target. You want to have the rifle to be able to hit the bullseye. That's the analogy I would use for how we can take a house that's got a specific value proposition and deliver that to the correct audience. Make sense? Yeah, I thought so. So we want to look for an agent who has the ability to sell the value, not just with the signs and with the posted ads that might be out there. Maybe it's local postcards, maybe it's newspapers or magazines, but even those things really are not where buyers look. It's mostly online. So let's go. You know, open house, you've heard me. How many times do I tell this? Open houses don't sell houses. Open houses just create a lot of headaches for most sellers. We do them. Yes, we do them. But we do them because it's only a 1% chance that a house is going to sell from an open house. So why make it such a big part of the job description of a realtor? It's good for the realtors. Like, I like to have open houses because I get to meet your neighbors and suspects and the prospects that might wander through. All right. But in fact, it may be a good place for you to meet an agent, but then ask yourself the question, okay, kind of in a non formal way, you can wander in and just engage an agent in a conversation and not have an appointment. And then you can take your first impression away from that open house to decide if you want to have a further conversation. Since we don't do open houses, please don't prejudice against us, okay? Just give us a call. We'll meet with you. All right, well, I'm going to have to take another break in just a moment. But before I do, let me remind you of our new website at ericstewartgroup.com. I'm very seriously encouraging you to take the time, log in at ericstewartgroup.com, because we have a very dynamic brand new site. It's just been up for a few weeks, and you have an opportunity to download the information that I talk about on the show, not have to request a copy be mailed to you. You can, of course, call us if you're not on the web and get a hard copy. If you like to write in it like an old book, fine, no problem. We'll mail it to you free of charge. Call us at 1-800-900-9104. Hey, coming up, John Yetman from Morgan Stanley and Candy Watts from the Eric Stewart Group will talk appraisals right here.